We get up to Daf Kuf Amid Aleph. We're almost up to the Mishnah. And when I say the Mishnah, I mean the second Mishnah. But we still have a filler that we didn't complete yesterday. So what we're up to on Daf Kuf Amid Aleph is Amar Rab Yehuda Amar Rav. And we'll see if we can... If you have the Gemara after the first Mishnah on the Amud and the Mishnah below it, it's smack in the middle, right below Tosis Achazoso, and it starts with Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Tel Hamislaket Asara Mitoch Arba. Okay, so we're talking about an incline, and the question is, do we view this as a Rishus HaRabim because it's inside a Rishus HaRabim, or do we view it as a Rishus HaYochid? Now, if it's what's called a Tashmish HaRabim, meaning if it's something that the Rabim could use, you know, as they walk through the Rishus HaRabim, then this tail doesn't bother them. Why? Because again, although the tail is mislaket asara, it means at some point the tail climbs above 10 tefachim, which is way beyond the tashmish of Rishus HaRabim. As we said, Rishus HaRabim means you walk on the floor, and when you hit something that's 10 tefachim high, certainly that's not tashmish Rishus HaRabim. But we're talking about a tail hamislaket, which means that although it's 10 tefachim at its height, I mean, that doesn't say anything really, but what I mean by its height is as you go up to the incline, to the top of the incline, the top of the incline is certainly 10 tefachim high, otherwise we're not talking about a tail. A tail means a Rishus HaYochid. Such that if he's throwing something onto this tail, he's chayav because the tail has the status of a Rishus HaYochid. So obviously the tail itself, at some point, let's call it a pinnacle, it hits a height of 10 tefachim, and therefore the tail itself is a candidate, shall we say, for becoming a Rishus HaYochid. It's got a height of 10 tefachim. Now, the problem is that the tail, you know, is located in Rishus HaRabim, and at some point it starts slanting upwards. That's called mislaket. Mislaket means slanting upwards. In Hebrew it's called madron, right? Madron means a slant. And a slant gradually climbs higher and higher. Okay. Now, this slant, which we call a tail, from the Rishus HaRabim until going up the ramp till its height, is 4 amos. So now we're going to have 2 variables here. We're going to have, in order to determine how sharp the slant is, the angle, we're going to have to take into consideration the orech, which means the total distance or size of the tail, and its relationship to the gova. So now we have these 2 variables. Says Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, if it's mislaket, if the slant is asara mitoch arba, which means that there are 4 amos until it really slants up on top, then vizorak v'nochal gabov, if he throws something from Rishus HaRabim and it lands on the top of this tail, chayov. In other words, we view this tail as if it was standing vertically, which is called in Hebrew zakuf. So even though it's mishupa, even though it's really on an angle, but we view it as if it was standing. And what is the significance of viewing it as if it's standing? It's no longer part of Rishus HaRabim, but rather it sets up a Rishus HaYochid unto itself. Why? Because it's 10 Tvachim high at its higher point. So imagine the following scenario. Let's say you had a Mavui or a Chatzer, a bunch of houses. And those houses are lifted above the Rishus HaRabim by a height of 10 Tvachim. And if somebody was going into the Mavui from the Rishus HaRabim, how would he enter into the Mavui? He would go up this ramp. This ramp is going to take him into the Mavui. Now, the ramp itself, does it have the status of a Rishus HaYochid? Well, on the one hand, it's located in Rishus HaRabim, so it's the, you know, it's sort of like the access, right? Like today you have, you have synagogues. I don't know if you'll see it here in Israel so often, but in America they're, you know, that are user-friendly, you know, for people who are in a wheelchair or so. You follow what I mean? So they'll allow for a ramp that will take someone with his wheelchair up a ramp up to the, you know, to the bima, let's say, right? So I'm just giving an example. So we have in the Rishus HaRabim, people want to climb up to the Rishus HaYochid, and the Rishus HaYochid is one level above the Rishus HaRabim, so they'll create this ramp. And so from one perspective, the ramp itself is serving the B'nai Rishus HaYochid. I'm sorry, scratch that. The ramp is servicing the B'nai Rishus HaRabim, right? Because this is their way of going through the Rishus HaRabim and having access to the Rishus HaYochid. They go up this Makom Meshupa. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda Rav Rav, and he says, you know what? It's not that sharp of a slant. Why? Because over a long distance, which is four amos wide, four amos, I don't know if I should use the word wide because that might confuse us, but a four amah distance until you finally get up to the area that is above Rishus HaYochid, which is called 10 Tvachim high. So since the slant is considered a very gradual slant, it's not very sharp, so therefore, he says, Nechshav ki'ilu ha-mokom ha-meshupa kulo zokuf. And if it's kulo zokuf, then it's part of Rishus HaYochid, because it's zokuf in its head, so to speak, in the top, and the top is 10 Tvachim high. I have a little bit of a diagram here. So let's talk about the incline over here. You have 10 Tvachim height, and the beginning of the incline is actually 4 Amos away. 4 Amos away. Okay. So now, if he's standing in a Rishus HaRabim, how do we view this slope? Do we view it as a gradual slope or it's an upright wall? Okay. And the nafkamina is going to be whether it's called Nicha Tashmishte or Lo Nicha Tashmishte. If it's Nicha Tashmishte, then we view it as part of the Rishus HaRabim, so to speak, the surface level of Rishus HaRabim. So now the Chazal have to determine whether or not this slope, this ramp, is to be considered an upright wall, or rather it's a gradual incline, but it's not upright. It's not low nicha tashlis. That's a double negative. He says, according to Rabbi Yehuda Merav, if the slope rises to a height of 10 tefachim within an area span of Dalet Amos, then Dalet Amos is not a large area. It's a very limited area. Would you agree with me? Dalet Amos. Now, once the slope starts from ground level, and within a short area called Dalet Amos, it reaches its pinnacle, its height of 10 tefachim, then we see it as a steep slope. Okay, that's good. SS, steep slope. If it's a steep slope, then it's called Zakuf. And if it's called Zakuf, then it's called Lo Nicha Tashmishte, and it's no longer part of Rishus HaRabim. If, on the other hand, you've got an area that's more than 4 tefachim, from the beginning of the slope in its surface level until the height of the slope, before you enter into the Rishus HaYochid, then that's already Nicha Tashmishte. That's already considered part of the Rishus HaRabim. Tanya Nami Hachi, we're going to quote a braisa to support Rav. Mavui sheshavel lesocho. So we have a mavui that's level. Okay, that's level to the karka. Okay, so the Pesach HaMavui, right? The Pesach HaMavui, when you finally climb up this ramp, is on the same level as the surface of the Mavui. Just one second. So again, the surface or the ground level of the Mavui is above the Rishus HaRabim, and you enter into the Mavui through a Pesach, and you're on flat ground of the Mavui, on the same ground as the Mavui. Is Nasem Midron Lirshus HaRabim. So the opening of the Mavui is called a Midron, where Midron we said was a slope for Rishus HaRabim. One second. So wait a minute. So where's the... Just one second, I'm trying to figure out. I think I stopped in the middle of a sentence here, sorry. Oshave l'rshus harabim v'nase modrun midro l'socho is oso mavui eno tzarech lo lechi v'lo kora. Okay, that's not... Okay, we'll get back to this. That's not really the part of the... of the Brisa that interests us. Let's go to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tel HaMislaket. Oh, this is the part that the Gemara is quoting. Tel HaMislaket Asor Mitoch Asora V'Zorak V'Nochal Gabov Chayov. Okay, so that means that what you have is a repetition of Rav's variables. Namely, that if this slope is a very sharp slope, such that within a small area of Arba Amos, it's already mislaket, through the Rishus HaRabim, it goes all the way on top, is then it's called the Rishus HaYochid. Then it's called Zakuf. And if he throws from Rishus HaRabim to the top of this tail, he's going to be Chayef. So that's a repetition of what we saw in Ra. Okay, fine. Now, let's go back to the Reisha of this Braisa. And the Reisha of this Braisa is dealing with a Mavui. And the question is, whether or not the Mavui needs a lechi or a korah, right? So a normal mavui, if it has all the dimensions of a mavui, needs a lechi or a korah. Unless the mavui has a fourth mechitza. A fourth mechitza will obviate or replace the need for a lechi or a korah. Right, a mavui is surrounded by three mechitzos, which means that it's eino mefulosh, which means like if you go down the mavui, you know, you'll hit a dead end, you'll hit a kosel at the end. And the Rabbanan said that since it's open on one side, and the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim sort of spills into that mavui, then we need a lechi or a korah, because otherwise you can confuse it with a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And this brisa is going to set up a mavui that doesn't need a lechi or a korah, because in effect, it has a fourth mechitza. And the brisa has two different, shall we say, scenarios in which we call it a fourth mechitza and we obviate the need for a lechi and a korah. Okay, and basically what we're going to do is we're going to set up a fourth mechitza through this midron. Right, this midron, this ramp, which takes you from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim into the Mavui, is going to function as a fourth mechitza in either of two scenarios. So what's the first scenario? Is mavui sheshavel esocho, and then we have a second scenario of shove lirshus harabim. Okay, so I'm going to try to read the beer here and see if we can get the two scenarios. Again, the goal is to get this madron to be considered a fourth mechitza to replace the requirement of a lechi nekorah. So now let's talk about the first scenario, which is called Mavui Sheshova L'Socho, Shepesach HaMavui, Shova L'Karka HaMavui, V'Karka HaMavui Gvoa Mikarka Rishus HaRabim, Is Nasem Midron L'Rishus HaRabim, U'Mipesach HaMavui Hakarka Mishupas Vioredis Lushus HaRabim. So that's the classic case that we thought of before, where the Mavui is lifted, is raised above the Karka of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim by 10 Tfachim. And once you climb that 10 Tfachim from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you simply enter into the Mavui, which is now a flat surface. And he writes in the note over here, Midubar Shashipua, so the slant, Begova Asar Tfachim, Kishmagia La'orech Arba Amos. Ah, so now we have a case of Mislaket Asara Mitoch Arba. And we said that Mislaket Asara Mitoch Arba is considered Zokuf. So if it's considered Zokuf, then basically that Madron now functions as a mechitza, because we have a principle called God Achis Mechitzos, and now he's got 10 tfachim of the wall of the Madron that gives you a height that takes you all the way up Ad Lorakia, so to speak, meaning it's an imaginary mechitza. Okay, so that's the easy case. So again, we're talking about a shipua, which is asorat fachim, and it's an orech of arba amos. So we said it's mislaket asorat mitoch arba is a very sharp, sharp slope. Now, what's the next case? Oh, shahaya pesach hamavui shove lekarka rishus harabim, which means that you go from the rishus harabim directly into the Mavui. The Mavui is not lifted, as we said before, 10 tefachim above the Karka of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. But then Sharamavui Namuch Mirishus Aramin. In other words, Nasim Midron Litocho. So again, you enter from Rishus Aram directly into the Mavui, but the Mavui goes down, right? And it's Namuch Mirishus Aramin. So now you're sinking down into the Mavui from Rishus Aram. So now you're going on a ramp in a downward motion into Rishus Aram. And he says, Mipesach HaMavui V'lifnim HaKarka. So now from the entranceway into the Mavui, down into the Karka, Mishupas V'yoredes, this Midron goes down, this ramp goes down, Ad Shehi Mishtava L'Karka Mavui, until finally you end up on the surface level of the Mavui, which is below, is once again, you have a mechitza. Okay, now the mechitza means that since the highest point of the Madron, which is where the Rishus HaRabim meets the Mavui, at that point you have a drop of 10 tfachim, which means that the height of that, you know, the front part of that slant, so to speak, is 10 tfachim high. So that itself becomes a mechitza, such that now the Mavui is considered virtually closed off on all four sides. And therefore he doesn't need a lechi and a korah. But again, the our punchline in this braisa is Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, that a tela mislakit asor mitoch arba is called the Rishus HaYochid. And why is that? Because we have a very sharp slant, and it's not noach tashmisha for the Bnei Rishus HaRabim, and therefore we see it as Zakuv, and it's a Rishus HaYochid. Okay. So all that is kind of a tag on to yesterday's discussion. Now for today, we start the new Mishnah. Zorak L'toch Arba Amos. So he's standing in a Rishus HaRabim, he picks up an object, throws it four amos, but in his galgel chutz la'arba amos. Now, as he wanted it to land at a distance of four amos, but it starts rolling because of the impetus that he put in, and it goes beyond arba amos. So that's going to be a case of a dover she'enom eskaven. He's not chayev for this case, because he wanted to throw it at a definite distance where it would land at four amos, and it goes on. This is a kind of a misase kalocha, and he's potter. Now we have the opposite case. He throws something in Rishus HaRabim chutz l'arba amos, meaning he intends it to land more than four amos, but the ruach was pushing in the opposite direction, is galgel l'toch arba amos, and here he's chayev. So in other words, although he wanted to throw it a further distance, as long as it lands within four amos, in other words, beyond four amos of where he's standing, then he's chayev. And the question is why? If we're saying that in the Reisha, when it landed further than four amos, it didn't exactly pan out to what he wanted it to be, it's a misasiki's potur, why not say that if it landed closer to him, and he had no intention of putting it down at such a small distance, he's chayev. And just to again jolt our memories, we had a principle called Shem Mishimon, if you remember, that if you do a malacha and your intention is to do a complete malacha, but you did part of the malacha, and part of that malacha was necessary on the way to do the full malacha, and it created some significant change, like for example, shame, he intended to write the whole word Shimon, but he wrote shame, and he's going to be chayev for that. So we'll see if we can use that logic here. All right. So now the Gemara asks a question about the Sefer. How could you say he's chayev in the case where it lands? litoch arba amos v'holo nach. In other words, the Gemara interprets the Mishnah literally. The Mishnah says litoch arba amos. So although it was in the airspace of Rishus HaRabim beyond Arba Amos, but it never landed beyond Arba Amos, but rather it landed Toch Arba Amos. So the Gemara asks for Holo Nach. In order for you to be Chayav for Meleches Zrika in this case, it's got to go beyond Arba Amos, and it has to land beyond Arba Amos. But if it never landed beyond Arba Amos, it landed within Arba Amos, then the Hanacha, which is a critical element in Meleches Rika, is completely missing. So why is he Chayav? Amar Rab Yochanan, v'hu shenach al gabi mashu. In other words, the Mishnah is talking about a case where he threw an object beyond Arba Amos, and it landed on a mashu. Now, where is this mashu? So Rashi points out that this mashahu is within three tfachim height of the karka. And the wind carries it back into Rishus, back into the Toch Arba Amos. So ask yourself now, was there anocha beyond Arba Amos or not? And you and I would have said no, the wind carried it before it landed. But the answer is that since it was Toch Gimel Tfachim, so we have a principle called Toch Gimel Tfachim Ki Ara Smichta Dami. It's as if the ground rises to a level of three Tfachim, and all that airspace is filled in by the ground. And therefore it's considered a Hanacha on the area of Rishus HaRabim that's beyond four tefachim. Now again, we have to understand how Rabbi Yochanan sets up a hanacha with an object that's in motion. Do you follow my point? You know, even if you'll say that it's ka'ara smichta dami, and will raise the ground of Rishus HaRabim, but we still need some sort of hanacha. And I think the answer to that question is when Rabbi Yochanan adds these three words, v'noch al gabi mashahu, that it did sort of ricochet, so to speak, off a mashahu. And I thought that, again, this before the Rishonim, I'm just telling you intuitively, I thought that the noch al gabi mashahu is Rabbi Yochanan's answer to the question of how can I set up a relationship between this object that's just flying back in his face and the Toch Gimel Tfachim that was beyond four Amos? However, Rashi says, no. Rabbi Yochanan is lav dafka. Hu adin, the same law would apply, im lo noch al gabi mashu. However, haruach ikvaso bi'avir toch shlosha tfachim. It means before the object turned the corner and rebounded back towards Toch Dalet Tfachim, it reached a kind of a pinnacle, and the wind, again, this is all a fraction of a second, but the wind held up the object within three Tfachim of the Samach Lekarka, and then the wind carried us back into the fourth Tfachim. So that's Rashi Shita in this sugya. Omnam, he quotes the Ritva, Shel Rabbi Yochanan Dafka im noch al gabi mashu, if for one fraction of a second it landed on something, harezu hanocha. Aval im omad bi avir, ein zu hanocha. So the Ritva takes opposition to Rashi, and it's not enough that it was, so to speak, hung, you know, in midair, it was, floating in midair for a split second. It's got to be nach on some object. Okay, now, I want to quote to you a kash of Tosfos. Tosfos quotes the original source to this halach of Shlosha Tfachim. It's a Gemara back on Daf Tzadi Zayin. And there the Gemara quotes a Braisa, the Chefetz over B'shus Rabim Toch Shlosha Tfachim Asmucha L'Karka is Romes HaChefetz Ki'ilu Hu Munach Al Gabi HaKarka. So that's the source for this halacha of Toch Shlosha Tfachim. Now the Gemara's kasha here was v'hal lo noch, that there was no anoch. He says, "Im kein mai kusha sa Gemara. Yesh levayer sham Mishnah osekes biofen shenichnas achefetz toch shloshet tefachim asmuchas lekarka, and that was chutz liarba amos. So why do I need Rabbi Yochanan to introduce noch al gabi mashahu?" When I know the Braisa, and the Gemara knows the Braisa, back on Daf Tzadi Zayin. And we should say that our Mishnah is talking about Toch Shlosha Tfachim. He says, V'tirtzu, Shekol Sugis HaGemara Kan Cholekes Ala Braisa Deliel V'Solveres Kirava. And again, we didn't get to Rava yet, but Rava says that L'das Chachomim, Af B'Toch Shlosha Tfachim Asmuchas L'Karka, Ein HaChefetz Nechshav Kimunach, Elim kein noch al gabi mashu. So let's go with Rashi Shita here, that it's possible that you don't even need noch al gabi mashu. So in other words, Tosis is postulating a machlokes between the Braisa on Daf Tzadi Zayin and our sugya here on Daf Kuf. So according to the sugya on Daf Tzadi Zayin, the Braisa establishes you don't even need a hanocha. It's kemunach agavi karka simply because it entered into the airspace that's within three tvachim of the karka. Our sugya says no, you need a hanocha. It's not enough that it's in the airspace of shlosha tvachim smuchos lekarka. And perhaps Rabbi Yochanan, especially if you go like the Ritva, maybe even according to Rashi, but according to Ritva, he's solving that problem because he's adding another variable into the equation. And that is true. Shlosha Tok Shlosha Tfachim in itself is not enough. We need a hanocha, but our Mishnah is talking about a case where there was a hanocha on a mashu. And that hanocha on a mashu is considered a hanocha. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a braisa to support Rabbi Yochanan. Zorak chutz liarba amos, udechafaso haruach vichnisoso. So the ruach catches this object after it passes the four amos mark, and without any anocha, it pushes the object back into toch dalet amos. Afal pisha chazra votzi aso potu. So that if the wind takes this object back and forth, and it ultimately lands outside of Arba Amos, you're potter in this case. Why? The very moment that the Chefetz, right, the Chefetz, let's go through. The Chefetz left outside of Arba Amos, right? And, and the power, the impetus that he put into that Zrika was not enough to create Anocha. Why? Because he's battling against the wind. So as far as his impetus and his Zrika is concerned, the wind made it impossible for him to do Anocha beyond Arba Amos. The wind now carries it back in the opposite direction and it lands outside beyond Arba Amos. That's already the power of the wind. That's not his power. Oh. Now we have the second case in the Braisa. Achazatu haruach mashu. The ruach held up the object for just a split second, like I called it a fraction of a second. Is then, even though there was no physical anocha, but it was suspended in midair beyond Arba Amos for a fraction of a second, afal pisha chazra vichnisato chayav. Even though at the end of the day the object landed within Arba Amos, he's chayav, And this Braisa supports the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. And let's go according to Rashi, because Rashi is very good over here. It says, Achazato Haruach, that even if the wind holds on to the object for that fraction of a second before it turns the object around the other direction, that's enough to be considered anocha, chutzli arba amos, and he's chayov. Okay. Now, I'm not sure how the Ritva is going to interpret this braisa. Maybe the Ritva is going to say mashahu means that it had anocha al gabi mashu. Omar Rava. Rava is going to support Rabbi Yochanan. Toch shlosha lirabbanan, in the case where the object reached the area which is in lower than the height of shlosha tvachim in the karka, we saw in the Braisa Daf Tzadi Zayin that's considered as if it's already nach. No. The rabbanan here don't agree with that. And they say, Tzorach hanoch al gabi mashu. You know, that language, by the way, seems to support the Ritva. It's al gabi mashu. But in any event, we're not going to say, according to our Rabbanon, that the chefetz that went through the airspace of three tvachim, meaning lower than three, is considered nach al gabi karka. No. We need a hanocha of some sort, even on a mashahu, in order for it to be considered nach. And that's basically reiterating what we saw in Rabbi Yochanan, that although it's within three tvachim, we need anoch al gabi mashu. Okay. Yosef Mereimar v'komer leila shmaitita. Right, so Mereimar was saying over this sugi of Rava, Amalei Ravina l'mereimar, so Ravina turns back and he says the following. Now we're on Kuf Amid Beis, Lav Hainu Masnisen. In other words, Rava seems to be just simply, you know, reiterating what we saw in the Mishnah, especially with the interpretation of, in other words, you know, Mereimar is telling over this sugya to Ravina in the name of Rava, as if to say, Rava came up with a new halacha, that Toch Shlosha Tvachim is not enough, we need a hanocha. Well, guess what? I don't need to hear that from Rava, I hear it from the Mishnah itself, at least the way Rabbi Yochanan interpreted the Mishnah. Lav Hainu Masnisin. The Mishnah says if you throw an object in Rishus HaRabim and it goes beyond Arba Amos, and it rolls back and lands within Arba Amos, he's still chayav, but why? On Rabbi Yochanan Vusha Noch Al Gabi Mashu. Because when it got to this low ground airspace of Tok Shlosha Tvachim, Smuchas Lekarka, before it went back into Arba Amos, it was Nach Al Gabi Mashu. So we see that even though it's within Shlosha Tvachim, Smuchas Lekarka, we see that nevertheless we require Ehanocha. So now Mereimar is going to try to respond to Ravina and come up with a chiddush that Rava is adding something that a din that we wouldn't have derived from our Mishnah. Amalei misgalgel ka'amrit misgalgel ein sofo lanuach aval hai kevin de sofo lanuach afal gav de lonach kimand noch dummy. If I only had the Mishnah, I wouldn't have known the conclusion of Rava. Why is that? Because if you read the Mishnah carefully, the Mishnah says Nisgalgel Chutzli Arba Amos, or Nisgalgel Toch Arba Amos. In other words, the Sefer of the Mishnah says that Yechayev. Why? Because it was Nisgalgel L'toch Arba Amos. Okay, if it's Nisgalgel, that's called Ein Sofo Lanuach. In other words, if you're talking about something that's in motion, it's in constant motion, and it's rolling, that's not considered Nach. And in that case, our Mishnah says you need Hanocha, as Rabbi Yochanan qualifies it. Why? Because the case of Misgalgel. And that's not considered Nach. Aval Hai, but in the case of Rava, where the object is going to fall onto the karka, it's not rolling onto the karka, and it's going to fall onto the karka underneath the place where it is came into Sofa Lanuach, since in any event it was really destined to fall down and find its place on the karka, as Afagav Delonach, I could apply the principle of Sofa Lanuach. And Sofa Lanuach is Kiman Dinach Dami. That's what I would have said if not for Rava. So let me just give you a little bit of a summary here of what we learned. He says the following. When an object is rolling, then it's not destined to come to a rest on the ground beneath it. So therefore, even if it passes within 3 tefach from the ground, I understand that it's not considered at rest, unless it takes a pause. And that's going to be Nach Mashu. But in Rava's case, it's destined to come to rest beneath the ground that it's passing, and it's not a Misgalgil, and therefore, I would have thought, if not for Rava, that even where it hasn't yet come to a rest, but nevertheless it's within 3 tefachim of the ground, it's as though it came to a rest. And it's falling down vertically. And therefore we can say it's destined to come to a rest on the spot beneath it. And that was 4 amos away from where it was thrown. And I might think therefore it's kenach dami. And Rava wants to teach us, no, that it's never considered as if it's resting, even though it's within 3 tefachim of the ground, unless it actually pauses briefly. So even though the object is destined to come to a rest there, but nevertheless he needs that it actually pauses at one moment in time. And therefore he's not going to rely on Rabbi Yochanan in terms of the interpretation of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is talking about a case of Megalgil. And in the case of Megalgil, the object is moving not vertically but horizontally from place to place. Kamash Malon, Rava therefore is Mechadish Tos, that even in this case the Chachamim require that the object pause briefly within Shlosha Tfachim from the ground. And that leads us to the Mishnah here on the top of Daf Kuf Amid Beis. Hazorek Biyom Arba Amos Potter. So he throws an object 4 amos in the yam, and he's potter. In other words, a yam is not considered a reshus harabim, but rather it's considered a karmelis. Im hoya rakak mayim, reshus harabim aleches bo. So we're talking about not a yam, a sea, but rather a shallow pool of water. And now, the Rishus HaRabim passes through this Rakak Mayim, is Azorek Litocho Arba Amos Chayav. In other words, if he throws an object 4 amos, the pool is considered part of Rishus HaRabim. Now, at some point, you want to ask yourself the question, as the Mishnah is about to ask itself, when does this Rakak Mayim become an entity unto itself? It's a barrier to the Rabim, and therefore it's no longer part of Rishus HaRabim. But Kamu Rakak Mayim, it's got to be Pochos Me'asor Tvachim. The depth of this Rakak Mayim has to be less than 3 tvachim, and as such, we can still consider it part of Rishus HaRabim. Once it climbs up beyond that, and it's 10 tefachim deep, then that's not a Rishus HaRabim, and therefore he would be pot. Now, we're going to have to add another proviso here. If the Gemara is talking about a case where the Rakak Mayim is 10 tefachim deep, that's a Rishus HaYachid. But the answer is it cannot be Rishus HaYachid because it doesn't have the width that's necessary, 4 tefachim square of Rishus
hayachid. Rekak mayim rishus harabim ma'aleches po.
So again, you have this case of a shallow body of water which is less than 10 tefachim deep, and the public domain will pass through this water. It's a zorek mitoch arba amos chayav.
Now, how is that different from the reisha? The reisha says, "Imhoyer rekak mayim rishus harabim ma'aleches po hazorek litocho arba amos." Is chayav, and in the sefer it says rekak mayim rishus harabim ma'aleches po hazorek bitocho arba amos chayav.
So what is the difference here between the reisha and the sefer? So he says the following: the reisha, HaMishnah Kosva HaZorek LITOCHO VaHainu SheOmad MiChutz LeRekak VeZorak LITOCHO. So he and the Reisha is standing outside of the stream of water and he throws into the water. But BeSeifa HaZorek BITOCHO, not LITOCHO but BITOCHO, HaHainu SheOmad BITOCH HaRekak, he's inside the pool, the zorak betocho. So mainaf gemina. What's the difference whether he's standing outside throwing inside or he's inside throwing inside?
She'imaya kosov rak hazorek litocho.
If we only had the reisha where he's outside, he's throwing into the pool, hayinu omer, we would have thought dafka bozechai. Kevan sha'okar asachevetz mimokom sha'rabim ahalchim bo.
Ah.
In other words, we have sort of like an inferior kind of hotza, or in this case zrika, because it's landing in a place where most people would, let's say, walk around the pool. They wouldn't go into the pool. But at least he's chayav because he picked it up in a rishus harabim. He was standing outside the pool. So as far as the akira is concerned, he has an akira from a full-fledged, comfortable rishus harabim. Aval, but in the sefer, im amad l'toch harakak, he's standing in the pool, v'zorak, then the akira itself was mimokom she'ein harabim ahalchim bo. And I would have said, if I didn't have the sefer, that he's potter. Okay, now let's go the other direction. What would be the avmina to say that he's chayav dafka because he's standing inside the pool? We can equate and integrate the akira and anocha. Avolim omad michutz l'rakak. Right, it's comfortable for the rabbim to walk outside the pool on dry land, and then he throws it into a rakak. There, he's throwing it into a place where mahalchim bo bedochak. Right, it's not comfortable. So therefore, ain in the hamamina ain haakira v'anocha mitztarfos, and therefore he'd be potter. V'lachein kosva mishnah b'shnei ofanim elu. So there's a chiddush in the reisha that we wouldn't know for the seifa and vice versa. If we only had the reisha, we'd say he's chayav because at least he did an akira from a full-fledged rishus harabim. In the seifa, you should have been potter. There was not an akira from a noach tashmishte. If we only had the seifa, we would say that we can integrate the akira and the anocha because they're both from the same makom, from the same stream or the same pool. So let's see the Gemara. Okay. The Gemara says the following. Amalei ahu mirabona l'rova. Bishlema. We're talking about the status of this shallow pool. Is bishlema hiluch tre zimni? In other words, the Mishnah repeats itself and it's justified.
two times where the public domain splits through this pool. Hakamashmalon, and there's a double chidush here. Hiluch al yedet chak shmei hiluch, and tashmish al yedet chak lo shmei tashmish. So we have hiluch al yedet chak, and we have something called tashmish al yedet chak. So let's go back for a moment to the Mishnah. So you have a case of Zorek Bayam, okay, fine, and then we have Hoyurakak Mayim, Rishus Rav Levin, and he says, Azorek Litocho Arba Amos Chayav. Okay? So now we have Hiluch Al Yedet Chak, Shmei Hiluch. Now, what's the difference between the two cases here? So why is the first case called Hiluch al Yedeat Chak? Okay? Let's see. You have Rishus HaRabim, Overes. Okay. So do they use... Let me just, sorry. He says the following. Bishlema hiluch, hiluch trei zimni. I understand why the Tan has to teach me twice this din of Rishus HaRab Maleches Bo, that even though there's a pool of water, it's still considered Rishus HaRabim. Hakamash Malon is teaching me Shnei Dinim. Number one, Shehiluch al Yedeat Chak Shmei Hiluch. Makom Sheregilim HaRabim Loleches Bo Nechshav Rishus HaRabim. In other words, even though it's a bit uncomfortable to walk through this stream, but nevertheless, it's considered regilim laleches bo. That's the Chiddush Rav Mishnah. And we're going to upgrade the status of halicha here to recognize valid halicha, because, you know, al yedeat chak, you know, if you're pushed around and there's nowhere else to go, I guess, you go through the stream, this little, very shallow water. V'din zeh, Nilmad mikach sharakak nechshav l'rishus harabim af al pi sharabim malchim shom bidochak. Okay, so now we have the resha of this Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that hazorik l'tocho arba amos chayav, and since the rabim will use that stream through their halicha by walking through it, even though it's Ayideh Chak, therefore it's considered Rishus HaRabim, and you're chayav for four amos in Rishus HaRabim. Now the Tana tells us that the Mokom Rishus HaRabim Mahalch Leches Bo is considered even in a Rabim Yichon Leches Shom. Oh, fine. Now we have another din, and that's called Tashmish Ayideh Chak. Okay, so halicha yedet chak, we said, was considered halicha. It's not comfortable to walk through the stream, but the rabbim do so, and that's valid. That's considered part of the Rishus HaRab. Avol, now, tashmish harabim yedet chak, lo shmei tashmish. Okay, what's the scenario here called tashmish al yedeat chak? He says, "Makom sharabim mishtamshim bo bidochak." Is that makom einu nechshav l'shus harabim machmas tashmish bidochak? And guma shenimtzeis b'shus harabim v'omka pachos mi'asor tefachim einu nachsheves l'shus harabim. Okay. Yafal pishi re'uya l'rabim l'tashmish, she'echolim l'atznia ba kovoyim o sudorim, mikomakom ho'ol v'tashmish zeh rak b'dochak, eino nechshav l'shus ha'rabim achmoso.
So it's amazing. The Gemara is like darshaning the Reisha and the Sefer, this Mishnah, as if it was like a pasuk in Chumash. You know, that the Mishnah repeats itself to tell you only this, and a miut to exclude another case. The other case is not even here in the Mishnah. It's like, again, like darshaning a pasuk. So why did the Mishnah twice have to repeat that if the Rishus HaRabim cuts through this stream, you know, this low pool, that Yechayev, and it has the status of Rishus HaRabim, the answer is to tell you that Dafka stream, Dafka water above ground. But if you had a Guma, which again is a dry Guma, and somehow the Karka of Rishus HaRabim dips down, it's not flat. I mean, the Gemara always assumes that the Karka of Rishus HaRabim is not flat. But here it dips down, maybe in a small area. I don't know exactly what the dimensions are. But it's actually something that you wouldn't want to walk into it. You know, it might trip and fall, but you can hide something there. And although that's not the most comfortable place to hide something, but nevertheless, it's called Tashmish. Would that alone be an agent or a factor to incorporate that Guma into Rishus HaRabim and consider it an extension of Rishus HaRabim? In the case of the stream of the pool, we consider it an extension of Rishus HaRabim because the Rabim Mahalchim. So Hiluch HaRabim, even though it's Alidei Adchak, it's not comfortable, is enough to expand the scope of Rishus HaRabim to include even the Rakak Mayim. But in the case of a Guma, that's not Hiluch Alidei Adchak. No one's walking into the Guma. Imagine the Guma is 9 tefachim deep. You know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, land up in the bottom of a Guma. But on the other hand, you could perhaps hide something there. I mean, like if you learn Eilu Metzias, you know that people used to hide things in little parts of Rishus HaRabim. Almanas, that they would come back an hour later. You know, you want to put your package down and do your shopping and then come back and pick up your heavy package. And here we're going to say that Tashmish Alidei Adchak lo avi Tashmish. And how do we derive that? When the Mishnah doesn't even talk about Tashmish Alidei Adchak, from the fact that the Mishnah repeated itself. That's how I understand this Gemara. Now the Gemara is not happy yet, because even though the emphasis on Hiluch twice is to exclude Tashmish Alidei Adchak in the case of Guma, but El Rakak Trei Zimni Lomi, if the Mishnah is just interested in giving me two examples of Hiluch Alidei Adchak, give me two different examples of Hiluch Alidei Adchak. Could the Mishnah not have found other examples? Why is the Mishnah limited to repeat, you know, the Hiluch Alidei Adchak twice in the same identical background, the same scenario of Rakak? So Rav answers, Chad, one time the Tana wants to tell me Rakak is considered Rishus HaRabim B'Yemos HaChama during the summer months. V'chad, and an additional scenario of Rakak, and the Rakak is Rishus HaRabim in the winter months. Utsrich, and I need both. It's not enough B'Yemos HaChama, I need B'Yemos HaGishomim. If the Mishnah would have only had one of the two, I would have thought that the din and the status of Rakak changes. Sometimes people might, in the hot sun, go into this Rakak deliberately and cool themselves off. Like you've seen sprinklers where the children like to play in the sprinklers during the hot day. You'll see it in parks and so on. Avol b'yemos hagshamim, nobody really goes into cold water in the middle of the street. Is low, we shouldn't consider the rakakas an integral part of Rishus HaRabim
And now the Mishnah wants to tell me, no, even under those circumstances, it could be that the Rabbim will go into the water. Why would a person find it, so to speak, convenient to go into the rakak during the winter months? It's a little bit chilly to go into the rakak, but came into mitanfe, because during the mosak shomim, there's a lot of filth around, and therefore is lo ichpas lehu. You know, maybe in the summer months, you know, you want to be spiffy, you're not going to go into these puddles of water, but in the case of the winter months, when you've got sort of like stains all over the place on your clothing, is therefore you don't mind, lo ichpas, you don't mind going into the rakak. But be mosach chamam, no, we don't know if rakak during your mosach chamam, where people don't want to go into dirty their clothes, would constitute part of the Rishus HaRab. That's why the Mishnah doubles itself over in the case of rakak. Okay, now let's go back for a moment to the Mishnah, and we'll take a look at the Imhoya, right? The Mishnah says Imhoya Rakak Mayim. Imhoya Rakak, Ha Mishnah Sifas Tevos Hoya, Imhoya, Kidesh Lo Nomar. Shemedubar b'mokom shenaser rakak rak b'mos hagshomim ha'mos hachamein rakak v'atam shenekshev l'shus rabim hu mishum she rabim mahalchim bo b'mos hachama. Is therefore a Mishnah kosva imhoya to teach me that even though mitchiloso is rakak, and even in Yemos HaChametz or Akak, it's considered Rishus HaRabim. Now, we discussed earlier the case of Misgalgil, right? A Chifetz HaMisgalgil B'Avir. And it's Ein Sofa Lanuach, as opposed to a regular object that is flying through the air, but it's about to land, and it's destined to land in that place, and then we consider it Sofa Lanuach, although the wind may have carried it, but it was Sofa Lanuach, and Sofa Lanuach is Kinach Dami. So the Ritva says that he doesn't understand. Rav is talking according to the Chacham and the Braisa back on Daf Tzadi Zion, that if you throw something from Rishus HaYochid into another Rishus HaYochid and it goes through Rishus HaRabim in the middle, you're potter. And that's a case of Ein Sofa Lanuach Rishus HaRabim. So how can he derive from Rava that Sofa Lanuach needs Hanoch Al Gabi Mashu? Rav is talking about Chachamim in the Braisa there. And the halacha is that he's potter even though it's Ein Sofa Lanuach. V'tirates, the Ritva offers the following answer. Sh'rova sh'omar tok shlo shel rabbonon tzor chanoch al gabi mashu diber v'chol ofanim shel tok shlo shel. Gam biofen shu nach lebasof biosom makom shu nichnas betoch shlosha. So that Rava, when he said tok shlosha, you need anocha, he's talking about all cases of tok shlosha, even a case where it's nach lebasof biosom makom shu nichnas tok shlosha. Okay, so let's just make a cheshbon where we got up to. We're here on Daf Kuf Amud Beis. And we're up to Abaye. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll just take, let's see if we could take another few minutes here. Maybe to just fit in Abaye. Abaye Omer Itzrich. The Tana
had to repeat the case and the din of Rakak, the Salkadait Chamin, I would have thought, Hanimili, Hechidavi Arba Amos, Hol Hechidavi Arba Amos Akufe Makfile. So Hecha, the law of Arba Amos, if the Rakak doesn't have a width of Arba Amos, so B'nai B'Shisram go in there, because it's Nach, it's Noach, it's a, you know, it's a very small pool, so why take the effort of surrounding, it's a small pool anyway. But let's say the Rakak would be Arba Amos, right? Then it's not Noach for the B'nai B'Shisram Sarabim, they would rather go around it then go into it and pass through it. And therefore I would think it's not considered a Rishus HaRabim, give it a status perhaps of a Carmelis. So that's why the Tana went ahead and repeated himself in the din of Rakak to teach me that even if the Rakak is wide for Amos, it's still considered Rishus HaRabim, and B'nai Rishus HaRabim will actually go there, B'dochak. And Hiluch HaYidet Chak Shmei Hiluch. Ravashi Omer Yitzrich, why did the Mishnah have to repeat itself in the case of Rakak? Salka Daitcha, you know, I would have thought, Hani Mili Hecha Da'avi Arba, that when do we consider it part of Rishus Rav? That's only if it's for Tfachim. It's Derech Hanoshim Lavar Betocho. And that's because so until now we were talking about four Amos. Now we're talking about four Tfachim. And we would have thought, Nahavamina, that in a Rakak that's four Tfachim, people go into the Rakak. Avalhech de lo havi arba. If let's say the Rakak is not four Tfachim wide, is then Mifse Pasile. He's going to jump over this little pool. And therefore it's not part of Rishus HaRabim. So the Tana had to go ahead and repeat itself to teach me that even a Rakak that's not four Tvachim wide, it's considered a Rishus HaRabim. Not everyone's going to jump over this Rakak. Some people will go inside into the Rakak. The Azdar of Ashi Litameh. And this statement, this interpretation of Rav Ashi is consistent. The Omer Rav Ashi, Haiman de Zorik v'noch aguda de gamla chayev. So you have a bridge, and you have a person who, let's say, he throws an object and it lands on a plank of a bridge, he's chayev. Shari Rabim Bokimbo, because the public passes through it. In other words, even though some people jump over the plank, if there's an isolated plank on a bridge, others will pass through it. Some will avoid stepping on the plank, but many will step on the plank anyway. And that's what we're seeing here in Rav Ashi when he speaks about Arba Tfachim, and that although many people will jump over the Arba Tfachim pool, but some will walk right into the pool. All right, so that leads us to the Mishnah, the second Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Amud Beis.